be seated. Delighted to have you all with us today. I will call ours. I have marked that there are no groups scheduled. We'll call our second case for today, 09AP2795. Jamie A. Gister versus American Family Mutual Insurance Company, Timothy Feely, representing St. Joseph's Hospital of Marshfield. Mr. Feely.
Thank you, Chief Justice. My name is Tim Feely. This is my colleague, Sarah McCarthy. We're from the law firm of Hall, Render, Killian, Heath & Lyman in Milwaukee, and we have the honor of representing St. Joseph's Hospital of Marshfield in this appeal. May it please the Court. The issue in this case is whether a charitable hospital that's required by federal law to provide emergency care to patients may file a lien on the tort recovery that's owed by a Medicaid recipient or owed to a Medicaid recipient. This issue is significant not only because it calls into question the statutory lien rights that date back to the 1960s that were granted to charitable hospitals by the legislature, but also because it highlights the financial pressures that exist today on Wisconsin Medicaid, and also highlights the rules that the legislature intended Medicaid to be the payer of last resort in the state of Wisconsin. What this case is not about, contrary to the plaintiff's arguments, is about impinging on the state's rights to pursue third-party liability if the state pays for the recipient's care. It's also not about imposing direct charges on a Medicaid recipient. To the contrary, I would submit to the Court that filing a hospital lien on the tort recovery owed by a Medicaid recipient is a statutorily authorized method of a hospital collecting from the responsible party, which is consistent with the payer of last resort rules and cost avoidance rules in Chapter 49, and also consistent with this Court's prior rulings that at all times responsibility for the patient's injuries should remain solely and fully on the tortfeasor. The fact that the tortfeasor in this case had insufficient insurance coverage should not be used to create an environment in Wisconsin where hospitals can never file liens against the tort recoveries owed by other Medicare or Medicaid patients. This will be the result, however, if the Court allows the decision of the Court of Appeals in this case to stand. Now, I understand that when you hear from the plaintiffs in this case, you're going to hear some arguments based on equity, and so I'd like at least initially to address what I anticipate some of those arguments are going to be. Those arguments come out very loud and clear in the briefs that have been filed by the plaintiffs in the Wisconsin Association for Justice in this case. Before the circuit court, however, the plaintiffs argued that if there had been enough coverage to both compensate the plaintiffs and pay the hospital liens, that the hospital liens would not have been invalid. They also acknowledge
that's sort of a rhymes kind of analysis, isn't it? I mean, if we just had regular insurance here rather than having government standing in for the costs of the care, as it does in Medicaid, then you would be looking at that as a rhymes analysis. In other words, has the plaintiff been made whole before the insurance company can receive some of the proceeds from the payment by the tortfeasor, right?
I think that's exactly right, Justice. Absent the availability of a lien, and a lien is only available to charitable hospitals in Wisconsin. Other providers, physician groups, clinics are not entitled to pursue lien rights. So you are exactly right. Absent the lien, you would be talking at best a subrogated interest, which, of course, would be extinguishable at a hearing pursuant to this Court's decisions in Rhymes.
Why isn't Rhymes at issue here? The Act, normally when you look under 49.89 sub 5, that's one of the statutes that has implications on the made whole doctrine. And my recollection is it deals with giving, you know, the statutory formula, much like Chapter 102 in workers' comp, you've got a statutory formula. They have a statutory formula in situations where the government is paying money whether it's the county department or municipality, that's the statute I referred to, or if you're talking about Medicaid, through the department. But we're not talking about that here. I mean, this is not a government subrogation claim. This is a lien, a statutory lien, not a government subrogation claim. So why isn't it subject to common law principle of rhymes?
Because a lien under 779AD is a right granted by the legislature under circumstances where that right would not exist under common law. And so subrogation is a common law right. It is a right granted by courts to parties under certain circumstances.
But Rhymes goes not to whether or not the lien is granted or whether or not they have the lien, but it goes to priorities. So, I mean, they can have a lien, and it can be a real solid lien with lots of integrity, but the Rhymes case is our common law regarding priorities of payments, including liens.
Correct. And I would argue, Justice, that a lien under 779AD is a priority right that is not susceptible to elimination under Rhymes.
Now, you can argue that. Point me to the words in a statute that say that.
There are no words in the statute that would say that, but it is clear that the statutorily granted right is something I think that would trump the common law.
I haven't read this case recently, I'm sure. But I'm reading from something I oftentimes look at, one of our treatises, Law of Damages in Wisconsin. So I have to be careful because I haven't read the underlying case. But it says, and I'm reading from chapter 32, page 34, if the statute is so worded as to leave doubt about the legislature's intent to modify or preempt the common law rule, the statute will not be followed to so modify the rule. And it cites a couple of cases, including Waukesha County versus Johnson, Hooley versus School District, et cetera. So that's why I ask you, give me the language that says that this lien, not a government lien, this lien has priority over the common law.
Well, I guess I would answer the question this way, Justice. If you look at 779AD, it specifies one circumstance in which the hospital lien does not have a priority interest. And that one circumstance is the lien that's granted to the attorney on that same recovery. And so I think that's an indication of the legislature's intent that but for that, what I would call a priority interest, the hospital lien is the priority interest that would control over common law.
Mr. Feeley, the Court of Appeals relied heavily on the Doar case. Can you tell me why you feel they made a mistake in that regard? It seems as if that's the controlling precedent here.
Yes, and that is a good question, Justice Brooks. Yes, the Court of Appeals, in fact, said it could find no other law that permitted a lien to be levied upon a Medicaid recipient's tort recovery, and that, as a result, Doar barred the lien. We would submit to the Court that there are certain holdings in the Court of Appeals decision in Doar that should be overruled by this Court, or at the very least ignored for purposes of this case. There are three rulings, I believe, Justice, in Doar that are erroneous and find no support under Wisconsin law. The first ruling by the Court of Appeals in Doar was that a hospital cannot file a lien under the lien statute unless it is owed money by the patient because liens, the Court of Appeals said, presuppose a debt owed by the property owner. As additional support for that statement, the Court of Appeals said, nowhere in the Wisconsin statutes does the legislature reflect any intent to allow a lien to be impressed upon an individual's property if that property owner owes no debt. We believe that's an incorrect statement. And, in fact, if you look at Chapter 779, There are many other instances where, in fact, the property owner owes no debt to the lien claimant, but the legislature has granted a right to the lien claimant to encumber the property owner's interest. The initial portion of 779 that comes to mind is the construction lien statute. That statute specifically provides that a subcontractor that's owed money by the prime contractor can file a lien on the property owner's interest, even though that property owner would owe no debt to the subcontractor. If you assume, for example, the property owner has paid the prime contractor, the prime contractor has not paid the subcontractor, the legislature has said, regardless, even though the property owner owes no debt, the subcontractor can file a lien and encumber that property owner's interest. Another example, very good example in Chapter 779, is real estate broker commission liens. Same thing. If the property is sold, the seller owes a commission to the broker. Regardless, the real estate broker can file a lien. The lien can encumber the buyer-owner's interest in the property, even though the buyer, which purchased the property from the seller, owes no debt. The debt is owed by the seller, not by the buyer-owner. Another example I think that we cited in our brief is the attorney fees lien statute. When that lien is created under Chapter 757, the client owes no debt to the attorney. Yet the attorney is able to take a lien on the client's potential recovery in any tort settlement. And so when the Court of Appeals said in Doar, liens, the essence of a lien is that it presupposes a debt that's owed by the property owner to the lien claimant, there was no basis to make that statement under Wisconsin law. And in fact, that's exactly or contradictory to many of the other liens that have been granted by the legislature under Chapter 779. Another holding, Justice, that we believe was an error under Doar was the holding by the Court of Appeals that 77980, the hospital lien statute, does not give a hospital a direct claim against the tortfeasor. We think that was an erroneous ruling by the Court of Appeals in Doar as well. First, I would point out to the Court that if you look at subsection 2 of the hospital lien statute, the legislature used some pretty broad words in terms of describing a hospital's lien rights. Specifically, what the statute says is that liens attach to any and all causes of action, not just the proceeds of any settlement that's due the patient by the tortfeasor, but to any and all causes of action.
Is it your position that if St. Joseph pursues the hospital lien on a medical eligible patient, that the patient is responsible regardless of whether the lien is paid? I'm reading from page 10 of the amicus brief, and that says that's your position. It goes on to say, it's your position. If St. Joseph's determines that it's going to pursue a potentially liable third party and the third party does not have assets or liability coverage necessary to pay the claim, St. Joseph's takes the position that it can then pursue the patient for the full amount of the bill. Is that a correct characterization of your position?
It is not, and I do not believe that we ever made that argument in our brief. And, in fact, I would argue that it would be the circumstance potentially where the prohibition, the direct charge prohibition in 49.49.3M would apply. That would be an exercise of imposing a direct charge against the patient. And so at that point in time, I think under the scheme, under Chapter 49, the flexibility that's given to hospitals in terms of either pursuing cost avoidance or pay and chase, in that circumstance, assuming that the time to file the claim with Medicaid has not expired, I think the hospital would be within its rights to submit that claim to Medicaid. It could not pursue payment of those charges directly from the patient. So Justice Crooks, moving on in terms of why I believe Doar was erroneous, why it should be overruled by this court. In addition to subsection 2, the manner in which the legislature broadly defined the hospital's rights, Subsection 4 of the lien statute expressly gives hospitals a direct claim against the tortfeasor. And, in fact, it's even broader than that because it defines the hospital's claim, if the lien is bypassed, to be allowable against any person that has made the payment, not just the tortfeasor. The legislature used person. Presumably, I think we have to assume that it knew the difference and it intended person to be a broader category. It does allow hospitals a direct claim under those circumstances where the lien is bypassed. Finally, the third aspect or holding in Dorr, which we believe was erroneous, was that the filing of a hospital lien is a form of recourse against the patient because the tort claim belongs to the patient. I would submit to this court that under the facts in Dorr, which I would like to just briefly discuss, Dorr involved, similar to this case, a lien that was filed on a tort recovery that was owed by a patient. Under the facts of that case, the hospital had entered into a provider agreement with the health maintenance organization that provided insurance coverage to the patient. In that provider agreement, the hospital expressly promised to the HMO that in the event it treated any of the subscribers insured by the HMO agreement, that it would look solely to the HMO for payment of the hospital's charges. In addition, it also agreed not to exercise the exemption that was otherwise available under Chapter 609, 609.91. So not only were the patients, the subscribers, insured by that HMO, contractually immune based on the provider agreement that was entered into between the HMO and the hospital, they were also statutorily immune. Regardless of those immunities, what the hospital did endure was it filed the hospital lien. It chose not to bill the HMO. It chose instead to file a lien and docket a lien with the circuit court. It named the actual patients as the responsible parties on the lien that was docketed. And it actually intercepted funds that were being paid from the tortfeasor's insurance to the patient to cover its full charges in accordance with the lien. Under the facts of that case, I think all the Court of Appeals really had to say was that hospital, you had a contract whereby you promised to look solely to the HMO. You agreed not to exercise the immunity or the exception to the statutory immunity under 609. You acted inconsistent with your contract and inconsistent with the statute. Therefore, you had no right to pursue any other method of payment to cover the charges for the services that were rendered to the patient. That, I think, is what all the Court of Appeals should have said. That would have decided the issue. Instead, however, I would submit what the court did is it went into a tortured analysis. It started addressing the issue about, well, okay, where's the underlying debt? Who owes the underlying debt? I think what Dorr failed to realize is, and this is what I mentioned at the beginning of my argument, lien rights are a legislative grant under circumstances where those rights would not exist under common law. And so instead of the Court of Appeals asking the question, does the patient owe this debt because the HMO should have been the only payer source that was looked at for the hospital for payment, what Dorr should have considered or the question it should have asked is who's legally responsible to pay for that debt. If I had been arguing Dorr in front of this court, I would not have conceded, as the hospital did in Dorr, that no debt was owed by the plaintiffs under the facts of that case. What I would have conceded is that even though a debt was owed, and I believe, of course, a debt was owed because, as in this case, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of medical care were given to the plaintiffs for which the hospital, the provider, was not paid. So there was a debt owed, and the plaintiffs did appreciate that benefit. What I would have conceded is that even though that was the case, the plaintiffs are not responsible to pay for that debt. In Doar, the responsibility fell on the HMO. That was the basis of the provider agreement between the hospital and the HMO. That was the operation of the statutory immunity provision in 609.91. In this case, Justice, the responsibility for payment of the debt, I would say 4949.3M confirms and would state that the hospital cannot directly bill the patient. And Justice Bradley, you mentioned something during the first argument today, which I think rings true. Words mean something. In the statute, the legislature said you cannot impose direct charges. Filing of a hospital lien does not result in a bill to the patient. It is not a direct charge on the patient. It does not request the patient to pay anything directly to the hospital.
Counsel, following up on the theme of words mean something,
yes.
I understand your argument to be, and especially as you have elucidated your argument on Doar, that when you look at 779.80, hospital liens, in any situation, let's say a situation, I'm not going to consider Doar, no HMO, no situation like this where you have Chapter 49 implicated with medical assistance and Medicaid generally. Let's say no insurance company is implicated in terms of having paid, and no medical assistance is implicated. 779.80 is just the general hospital lien statute. Someone comes in, they don't pay, hospital can file a lien, can't they?
Yes, they can. I mean, I guess the one point I would add to that is, and the hospital probably would file the lien under those circumstances because the unknown, I mean, you've got to understand the lien statute has deadlines and often, okay.
Okay, that's not really, with your permission, that's not the avenue I'm going. My question is this, words make a difference. So where in 779.80 are the words that say hospitals in all actions, whether there's insurance, whether there's medical assistance, because this is the general hospital lien statute, has priorities in distributions of proceeds in personal injury cases. Where is the language? Where are the words in 779.80 that would jettison the common law made whole doctrine? You have to do it with specific words. Our cases have said. So where are those specific words in 779.80 that in all cases, from what I understand your argument, regardless if insurance is implicated, hospital liens always have priority? Where are the words?
The words are not in the statute. I certainly have to acknowledge that. But what I would argue to the court is that the statute does provide a circumstance where the hospital lien does not take priority, and that is with respect to the attorney fees lien. And so absent that exception, my belief in terms of the statute is that the lien is a priority interest.
Always, in all cases. I mean, all cases, unless it's a Chapter 102. I think 770.80 only excludes 102. So in all other cases, it's a priority, and it jettisons the common law doctrine in Wisconsin.
I would, my belief would be it jettisons the ability to be discharged pursuant to RIMES. I would not say that potentially it is priority over, for example, other liens that may be first in time. Similar to the type of distribution or analysis that you would see by a bankruptcy court in terms of security interests or other priority interests. But I would certainly argue that it would take priority over any common law, a right under RIMES.
So
So, counsel, you, as I see it, you have three options. One, bill Medicaid, but then you kind of rub against that responsibility to go after a third party if they're responsible, right?
I'm sorry, say that one more time, Justice.
You have three choices. You could bill Medicaid and you're done. You can't go after anybody else. That's it. End of the analysis. You take their money and you're done, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. But then you rub against the responsibility, if a third party is responsible for the bill, to go against the third party.
Yes.
Okay. So that's one option. Second option is to file a lien, which you did here, right?
Yes.
Or a third option would be to have a subrogation claim, right?
The subrogation, you know, that was the issue that was raised by the Court of Appeals. And so presumably to have a right of subrogation, there would have to be some interest other than the lien that would support that interest that the hospital could pursue for purposes of joining in any lawsuit. And so as I think about that, I guess theoretically, the question that you ask is true, but the difficulty that I have with the subrogation interest and whether or not that is even a valid interest on behalf of a hospital that does not have a lien is that there has to be at least some contractual right that would give rise to that interest. And so with the understanding, Justice, that, you know, liens are pursued by hospitals, I would say 99.9% of the time when it involves a patient that is presenting to the hospital on an emergency basis. The hospital has an obligation to treat under federal law. And under those circumstances, I don't think any court would allow to stand any contract that the hospital may put on the patient's stretcher agreeing to assign, for example, any right to payment.
And I see your lights on, so I'll just conclude. So you're saying that your only option really was to file the lien?
I believe that's true.
Okay, thank you.
I believe that's true. I see that I'm out of time. If the court has any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, it looks like my time is concluded.
Thank you, and you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you, Justice, Chief Justice.
Attorney Rhonda L. Lanford, representing the plaintiff, Jamie Hister.
Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court. St. Joseph's Hospital is trying to politicize an issue that is not political. Adopting St. Joseph's argument in this case ensures one thing only, that Medicaid will not be paid back for what it has paid for the Gisters' health care in this case, and that in the future, Medicaid's interests will be trumped by the hospital and the interests of other health care providers who choose to exercise their real options under the Medicaid statute's interest will also be trumped. The Gisters respectfully ask this court to affirm the Court of Appeals for two reasons. First, there is no authority for the hospital to file a lien against a Medicaid patient, either in the federal statutes, the state statutes, or any of the case law. Second, the Doar versus Sacred Heart case reasoning on liens presupposing a debt is sound and valid, and this court should affirm the court's decision on that ground as well. Turning to my first point, that there is no authority for the hospital to file a lien against a Medicaid patient. The hospital has mischaracterized its role and responsibility in the payer of last resort language. It has mischaracterized its right to payments when it's a Medicaid provider in this case. And it has mischaracterized the consequences and ramifications of its position on the Medicaid system. Payer of last resort language in all of the statutes and all of the regulations refers to the state's obligation to recoup Medicaid payments if there is a responsible third party. The hospital claims it is the protector of Medicaid in this case. This is disingenuous. The hospital's interest here is a self-interest, because had it truly believed it has a duty and its only option is to file and enforce a hospital lien, which is the issue here, it would not have submitted the bills to Medicaid for one member of the family for $380,000 and then chosen to try to enforce a lien against three other members of the family.
But, Counselor, the hospital doesn't make any more money either way. I mean, if they get paid out of the proceeds of the tort action or they get paid from Medicare, they're not achieving anything financially, are they? It's the same dollars they're going to get either way.
That is not correct, Your Honor, because under the Medicaid, if the hospital submits its bill to Medicaid, it gets paid a percentage of what its, quote-unquote, reasonable and necessary charges are. If a hospital lien is enforced, they get $1 out of a settlement, and you heard counsel argue for the priority of a hospital lien over all other liens.
Just let me get that clear, because that's something kind of went over my head. So what you're saying is that if they file a claim for the services they provided in against the recovery from a tortfeasor, they're going to get 100% of what they bill. But if they bill Medicaid, they aren't going to get 100% of what they bill. Is that correct?
That is correct if there is sufficient coverage in the case. Meaning,
I'm sorry, you're losing me again. So.
The premise is correct, Your Honor. The premise that you just stated is correct.
Okay, thank you.
The hospital is attempting to assert a priority lien in a case where a hospital lien in 1961 was passed. The statute was passed to protect hospitals in the event a person came in, the hospital was forced to treat the patient on an emergent basis, and the patient had no other means to pay. That is true in all of the cases that talk about hospital liens. That is true in lien law that is cited by secondary sources. A lien presupposes a debt.
Do you think Rhymes plays a role at all, or the logic of Rhymes?
The logic of Rhymes in a case like this, first of all, I would submit that it should not even be considered in a case with a hospital lien or with the function of a hospital lien and an insured patient. Because essentially, if a patient has insurance, whether it's Medicaid, Medicare, or some private health insurance, the hospital has no right to file a lien against that patient because the patient has other means to pay. So the hospital lien should never be implicated in a case where you're looking at limited coverage under health care, Medicaid, or Medicare. Medicaid itself does not consider that it is a payer of last resort. The Medicaid Department of Health Regulation statutes give healthcare providers two choices in billing Medicaid, and that is Department Rule 106.03.08. It says that a healthcare provider, and it does not pick out hospitals as a special category as the hospital would like, a healthcare provider under Medicaid has two options. One, bill Medicaid. With that language alone, Medicaid says, go ahead and bill us. We have the job of finding out if there's third-party liability. The second option is that a healthcare provider can join a personal injury claim. Joining a personal injury claim is not, as the hospital has suggested in its briefs, the same as filing and enforcing a hospital lien. A hospital lien, by its nature, is a debt against the Gisters in this family versus joining a personal injury claim, which they could do.
How would they join the claim? I thought I asked counsel that, and he said that's not an available remedy here.
It is available remedy, Honor, if you look at DHS 106037.
I know what the law says. That's why I asked him. I thought there were three options. He said there aren't three. There's just the lien or bill Medicaid.
First of all, the lien is not an option. There are two options. Joining a personal injury claim could mean a number of things. The hospital would have had to make an assessment that it wanted to join a claim. And then, if there were no lawsuit pending, the hospital could file a declaratory judgment action under 80605, asking the court to declare its rights because it is asserting its rights to join the claim. Second,
what would their claim have been here if they joined the personal injury lawsuit, the PI suit?
Joining the personal injury lawsuit would mean the claim would be the Gister's claim against American Family as the insurer and the negligent tortfeasor.
I understand what the PI suit would be, but what would the hospital's claim in that lawsuit be?
The hospital's claim would be the value of its medical expenses. It would have a claim for the value of its medical expenses.
Against who?
Against the tortfeasor and the...
But what would give rise to his claim? There's no contractual responsibility of the party to the hospital. I'm trying to get past what counsel said when he said we can't do it and here's why. And you're saying they can do it and here's why. I want to know how they wouldn't be kicked out of the lawsuit.
Well, they would not be kicked out of the lawsuit because by statute they have a right, if they forego billing Medicaid, to join a personal injury claim. They have that right.
Even if they don't have the right to bill the recipient of the services?
Correct. So that is what the regulations allow.
So it's a direct claim that they have against the insurance company?
It's a claim that they have for the reasonable value of their medical expenses from whatever proceeds are collected out of the insurance, out of the insurance action.
Well, you're losing me because there's not a contractual obligation between the hospital and the patient in this case because they never have to pay. They specifically can't be asked to pay.
Right, but there
So you can't have subrogation because subrogation's got to rise out of a contract or equitable subrogation. Here, I don't see that it's going to come from anything. So, I mean, I see the lien statute does give you a right to join it, but you're saying they can't use the lien. So then I'm at a loss as to how would you set out the claim if you're trying to write a claim and put the elements of the claim like you would do if you were a party seeking judgment. I'm kind of like Justice Siegler. I'm at a loss as to what would be the elements that you would say they should be filing on.
Justice, there is no mechanism laid out in the regulations as to exactly how a claim would be submitted. However, under the regulations, Medicaid has given the option of joining the personal injury claim. What that means in this context means that the hospital actually joins with the plaintiff in pursuing its claim for medical expenses. It is not an adversary. It is not filing a lien and then walking in and expecting to take $1 from any settlement because of what it claims is its priority lien rights. And the effect of what if the hospital were allowed to do that and use the hospital lien statute, Medicaid would be cut out of the pie. And allowing the hospital lien to go forward, to be enforced in this case, would mean that Medicaid does not get reimbursed for the money it has paid in this case. Because the hospital is claiming that it has priority rights over a Medicaid lien. There is still an outstanding over $7,000 lien that is owed to Medicaid in this case that will not be paid if this court allows the hospital to enforce its lien against the Gisters.
Counsel, it seems to me that you're talking about, in part, Wisconsin Administrative Code DHS 106.03(8).
Correct.
And that says if a provider treats a recipient for injuries, you have two choices. Number one, you may elect to bill medical MA for services provided. And the other is you may alternatively elect to seek payment by joining in the recipient's personal injury claim. I think this DHS regulation parrots the federal regulations as I understand it, giving those two options. Is there that you're familiar with, a code provision or a statutory provision that says to a provider like the hospital that you're supposed to try to go against, that you're supposed to try to take the second option before you take the first option, that you're supposed to try to join the recipient's personal injury claim before you elect to bill MA. Because I hear that in argument here that you're supposed to try to recoup first. Is there any code or statute or anything else that suggests that?
No. There is no code or statute that suggests that the hospital has a duty to go after third-party liability. That is the function of the state in recouping Medicaid payments. If you look closely at all of the regulations cited by the hospital, and even the hospital's own brief, it talks about the state's rights in recouping Medicaid. The state says, healthcare providers, this is not your responsibility. You can bill us if you want, and if you don't want to bill us, you can go off on your own and try to collect something. But you do not have to first bill a third-party provider. That is why in the Gorski case that the hospital relies so heavily on in its briefing has nothing to do with the Wisconsin case. Gorski was a Louisiana case where the statutes in Louisiana specifically stated you must first bill third-party liability if it exists before you bill Medicaid. Those are the words of the statute. That is not what Wisconsin provides. Wisconsin statutes say bill us or take your chances. It doesn't say bill us, take your chances, and hospital, you have a right above everyone else to file a lien. Because by the Medicaid allowing that to happen, Medicaid and other providers who may want to exercise that option are subservient below the lien of the hospital.
And the way this works is, given those two options, let's say the hospital chose the first option. It elects to bill MA for services provided with regard. And then MA pays, and then MA, the department, has a right of recoupment and has priority under this statute. Medical assistance
Correct.
Recoupment has priority if it's the department under 49.89 sub 5 has priority.
Exactly.
If it's the county, let me see if I have that down. If the county, municipality, or department, they can proceed to recoup after having paid benefits under some kind of a medical assistance program.
That is exactly correct, because that ensures that Medicaid will get paid back. Because if the hospital bills Medicaid, Medicaid has a subrogation right. There is almost no case you will find in a personal injury suit where there will not be a provider other than a hospital that is submitting a bill to Medicaid. Because, for example, doctors at hospitals are not employees of the hospital. In this case, the doctors billed Medicaid. The hospital chose to file a lien. That is why Medicaid has a subrogation in this case. And St. Joseph's, the hospital's argument in its brief that somehow we waived the department's right to subrogate because they were not included in the DEC action is just wrong. There's a statutory subrogation right to the Medicaid to be paid back, and Medicaid has the right to that money. But if the hospital is allowed to come in with a lien and take every dollar of that settlement, who pays Medicaid? Who would pay, in a future case, another provider who said, I want to exercise my option to join a personal injury claim? Medical doctors do not have a statutory lien right. The Medicaid statute's intended to put the hospital and all other providers in the same category. That is why they're called healthcare providers under Medicaid, and that is why they have two options under the regulations. The hospital has never addressed what happens to the Medicaid lien in any of its briefs. The hospital has never addressed how Medicaid gets paid back in cases where it has a priority lien and it takes every dollar of the settlement money. The hospital has never addressed why it believes that it is the payer of last resort for three of the family members, but not for the fourth, for which it filed a hospital lien, but then later did not enforce it and billed Medicaid for those charges. The hospital cannot have it both ways. If it has an obligation to file a lien and enforce it, it should do it in every case.
Was that fourth person part of the lawsuit?
Yes.
So they treated three out of the four differently.
Correct. They filed hospital liens against all four, then billed Medicaid $380,000 worth of charges for the fourth child, and then are attempting through this lawsuit to enforce the liens against the other three. That action alone does not support its argument that it has a duty to go after third-party liability, that it somehow it's its duty over the state's duty. Turning the court's attention to the Doar case, because counsel touched on the Doar case and asked this court to overturn the holdings of Doar. Let's first talk about a lien presupposing a debt. All of the secondary sources, such as ALRs, CJSs, all compiling information about lien cases, they all indicate that liens presuppose debts. The United States Supreme Court in the Alburn case, in Arkansas DHS versus Alburn, at page, and the site is 547 U.S. 268, at page 285 to 86, said, a lien presupposes a debt. All of the liens that are talked about, or that the hospital talked about as not presupposing a debt, they all do. For example, hospital lien statutes put in place for people who have no other means to pay, so that if there is liability coverage, the patient just does not go and settle with the liability company and not pay its hospital bills. In this case, the Gisters had a way to pay. They had insurance. It was Medicaid. A contractor's lien. You would be hard-pressed to look at a contractor and say, just because you filed a lien on the property does not mean you're not owed a debt by somebody.
So do I hear you right? You're just saying it shouldn't be the $155,000 plus amount. It should be the amount that's owed to Medicaid, and Medicaid should receive the money out of the settlement proceeds. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
What I'm saying is that in a Medicaid case, a hospital lien is not authorized in the first place.
Okay, but you're saying Medicaid can file liens here, right?
No, Medicaid has a subrogation, statutory subrogation interest to collect what it paid. It does not have a lien.
Okay, so you're saying Medicaid should have the, or would that be subject to the Rimes analysis?
I'm sorry?
Would the Medicaid subrogation interest be subject to the Rimes analysis?
No, Your Honor. Under the Arkansas DHS versus Elborn case that I previously cited, what the U.S. Supreme Court stated was that Medicaid subrogation liens are subject to pro rata analysis under the statutes.
I just want to make sure I understand you. So what you're saying, I think, is sure, we would be subject to paying the subrogation interest that Medicaid has in the amount Medicaid paid, but we are not subject to the lien amount of the hospital in the amount that the hospital claims.
Correct. Because a lien is not authorized for a person who has insurance. The analysis in the Gister case is exactly the same as the analysis in the Doar case. Both cases were plaintiffs who were injured in car accidents. Both cases had insurance, even though the Gisters is Medicaid. Medicaid is health insurance. The plaintiff in the Doar case had an HMO. Both cases, there was a statutory prohibition against direct billing or billing the patient. Medicaid has one. You cannot direct bill a patient. HMO statute has one. You cannot bill the patient for the balance of services. The analysis is the same. And what the Court of Appeals, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, said was you cannot impose a lien for which there is no debt. The Doars did not owe a debt to the hospital because of the operation of the HMO. The Gisters do not owe a debt to the hospital because of the operation of the Medicaid statutes and because there are only two options for the hospital to pursue in this case. And the hospital cannot explain to this court why it can bill Medicaid in one instance in the same case and then try to enforce hospital liens against the other three. And the only reason that that is occurring is because it was in the best interest of the hospital to do that. It is under no obligation or duty to do so.
Also, there isn't enough insurance proceeds to pay all of the medical expenses, is there?
It is my understanding there is not, Your Honor.
Right. So, I mean, if they filed a lien for all of it, they know what the insurance is. They really wouldn't be getting anywhere. Maybe that has something to do with why they filed with Medicare for one of the liens. One of the charges.
Precisely, Your Honor, but that is the analysis they must go through in deciding whether to bill Medicaid or join a personal injury suit. Their option is not bill Medicaid or file a hospital lien, because the hospital lien gives the hospital priority over every other provider and Medicaid itself. And Medicaid could not have wanted or envisioned that being the case, because allowing the hospital priority over Medicaid and other providers would violate state and federal law, because the federal statutes require the state to have a plan of action to collect money from third-party entities if expenses are paid and it is discovered that that a third party is responsible. The state also has those rules. We must collect if a third party is responsible. How can those be harmonized with a law that says a hospital can jump in front and take all of the money and not pay Medicaid back?
But what if the hospital's ability to jump in front were limited to the same percentage that they could collect on the bill from Medicaid? Would you feel the same way?
That poses a different question as to what the reimbursement rate should be for the hospital under Medicaid. Certainly, if the hospital lien were limited to – well, first of all, the hospital lien would not be valid under any circumstance because it is not one of the choices and it would still be a priority lien over Medicaid. It would not change the analysis.
Well, if I guess my question to you was, I mean, I understand what you're saying about they're trying to jump in front of Medicaid, and Medicaid really hasn't paid out 100% of the bill, so what they're trying to do is get a bigger piece of pie than they would if they
Precisely.
Billed. Okay, and I understand that. And my question to you then was, would you feel that they were still trying to get more than they are entitled to if they're hospital lien were limited to the percentage they could have gotten from Medicaid if they had chosen that billing route?
My position is that if that were the case, the hospital would not pursue a lien if that were the law, because if the payback was the same at Medicaid versus filing its own lien, it likely would not pursue that route. But that is not the case here, where a hospital lien just simply cannot be filed in a case where a claimant has Medicaid insurance. Getting back to the Doar case and the holding, the lien statutes that are cited that presuppose a debt, lien statutes simply give parties, certain entities under the statutes, a way to try to secure what is owed to them through some tangible object. It does not mean that a debt is not owed. If the Gisters came in to St. Joseph's Hospital, had no Medicaid, no insurance, period, and there was an American Family policy, let's assume they're totally uninsured, no Medicaid, no nothing, the hospital could file a hospital lien. And the hospital does not have to then, if there isn't sufficient proceeds from the insurance policy, let the Gisters off the hook for the balance. It's just a way to ensure that they recover some of the money that they expended. The Gisters are still responsible as the debtors to pay the hospital bill. Just like a mechanic's lien, for example, does not mean that the person who brought the car in does not owe the money. It just gives the mechanic the ability to secure payment somehow. And the purpose of the lien statute, when it was passed in 1961, was to prevent hospitals from having to provide services on an emergent basis, which they had to do under the federal law, and then not get any money for that. And that is not the case for a Medicaid provider hospital. They have the option of billing Medicaid and receiving money for their services. Or they can make the analysis to abandon billing Medicaid and join a personal injury claim. They do not have the option to encumber the property through a lien when the claimant or when the plaintiff has health insurance. Also in the Doar case, which counsel discussed, and Justice Bradley, I believe you hit on it as well, is that the hospital lien statute does not give a cause of action against a tortfeasor. The language of the statute gives a cause of action against a claim. It gives a lien against a claim. And in that circumstance, it is not the same as billing a tortfeasor for the medical expenses. Finally, the hospital, in this case, has acted throughout the course of these proceedings in the cloak of protecting Medicaid, in its own self-interest, by asking this court and the courts below to enforce a lien in a situation where a patient has no debt. That is not one of the options provided by the Medicaid statutes. That is not the hospital's role. It is not responsible to pay and chase in the payer of last resort statutes. And the consequences of this court accepting that reasoning would mean that Medicaid in this case goes unpaid and the burden of the Gister family medical care falls directly on the taxpayers. And in future cases, the same would be true for Medicaid and any health care provider.
Counselor, what you know, if we agree with you, what happens to the Medicaid bill in this case? Do they get paid the full $300,000+, or what do they get paid?
Well, Medicaid's bill is not $300,000+. It's based on the formula for Medicaid payback. And Medicaid would be factored in by its statutory lien into the settlement. There's one...
What happens to it? I mean, is there some consideration of it in regard to other claims that are made against the tortfeasor, or how does it work?
It's a subrogation lien, like any other subrogation lien.
So it's subject to your negotiation, I suppose, with the state, if you can work it out so they take less, like you often do with subrogation.
Well, under the Arkansas DHS versus Elborn case, the U.S. Supreme Court case, that case addresses directly what occurs to a Medicaid subrogation lien in a personal injury case. And that is that it is a pro rata analysis, ultimately, when you get to the point of settling.
Okay. All right, good.
One very important point before I sit down today. If this court overrules Doar versus Sacred Heart Hospital and the logic and reasoning behind it, it opens the door for hospitals to make a unilateral decision in cases where people have private insurance, even, and public insurance. It opens the door for the hospital to say, I will not accept what I've contractually agreed to accept from the insurance company, and I will instead file a hospital lien for $1 of what we have expended. It would allow a hospital to ignore the contracts with both public and private insurance companies, and it would allow the hospital to unilaterally decide when it honors those contracts and when it does not.
And for the full value rather than the discounted amount that the HMO might cost.
Exactly correct, Your Honor.
The hospital has followed the process that the legislature has set forth as the public policy of this state in Chapter 49. Couple of points I want to make about counsel's argument. First of all, the hospital lien statute. I've read the hospital lien statute. Nowhere in the lien statute does it state that a lien is valid only if there is not insurance to pay for the patient's bill. It doesn't say that. It states the lien is valid and attaches to any payment being made by the tortfeasor or person responsible for causing the person's injuries, regardless of whether or not there's another payer source, regardless of whether or not there's insurance, regardless of whether or not it's a Medicaid recipient. I think what counsel failed to explain to the court, what the Court of Appeals did not do in this case is it did not harmonize 4949, because that's their primary argument. Their primary argument is that by filing this lien, you are directly charging the patient. You cannot do that. You have one choice and one choice only, and that's bill Medicaid. Because hospital, it's not your obligation to pursue third-party liability. It's the state's obligation. And so what the Court of Appeals did not harmonize in this case, they didn't harmonize 4949.3M, which is the direct charge prohibition, with 49.6 subsection 2. 4946 subsection 2 states, first of all, subsection 2 of 4946 lists all of the benefits that Medicaid will pay a provider that submits a bill to Medicaid for payment. Then 2D of that statute sets forth an exception. And what the exception states is that it puts the provider on notice that regardless of all the benefits that Medicaid will pay for if you bill Medicaid, what Medicaid will not pay for is the services that are payable by third-party liability or some other insurance plan, including Medicare. And so to say that the Wisconsin legislature did not envision hospitals having the obligation to cost avoid, that is, to pursue third-party liability on their own, I think it's directly implicit in 4946-2D. If you can't be paid for benefits, if you can't be paid for services which are owed by a third party or by another insurance plan, you're reading out basically the cost avoidance principles that the legislature has set forth under the statute.
Counselor, do you agree with opposing counsel's argument that what you are seeking from the settlement is 100% of your bill and you couldn't get 100% of your bill if you submitted it to Medicare?
I will respond to that. First of all, it is true there is no dispute with respect to the reasonableness of the charges of the hospital in this case. And so there is a venue to challenge that, and there is a right of patients to do that if they think the hospital is charging too much. I would say this in response to counsel's statement. Medicaid pays similar to Medicare. It pays based on a diagnostic-related group, a DRG, a code, so to speak, that Medicare and Medicaid assign to inpatient charges, and it sets forth a set amount. The majority of the period of time, Medicare or Medicaid will pay less than the hospital's charges. What Medicare and Medicaid pays, they don't care
what the hospital pays. Reasonable and customary, generally,
okay.
Right?
It's not all, that is not always true, though. There are instances, actually, where Medicare or Medicaid could pay more than the hospital's bill. Because Medicare and Medicaid does not care what the hospital charges. They define their own payment schedule based on a DRG, a grouper, a code.
So the total amount of the bill here was, if I recall, around $182,000 when you put the three together. Am I right or wrong on that? You've got $182,799.61 is what I have for the expenses incurred by Jamie, Ethan, and Jared.
Yes.
And that's the amount of your lien?
That would be the amount of the lien, the hospital's charges, correct. So what I would argue the policy set forth by the legislature under Chapter 49 is that the $250,000 that would be divided by those three plaintiffs.
You've got another three or four plaintiffs that have to divide that too that are non-family members, as I recall. There are six or seven people. You have a $250,500 policy. The first $250,000 goes to the what's the person named Skyler? I'm sorry, because he had such big damages. That's the one that was submitted to Medicaid. I'm sorry. And then you have these three: Ethan, Jamie, and Jared, plus another three or four who are injured that will have to share the remaining $250,000. That's what I understand. The facts are. Am I facts understanding incorrect?
You are correct, Justice. The lien that was filed on Skyler, whose hospital bills were around $350,000, was submitted to Medicaid. Medicaid paid, and now Medicaid is entitled to collect what it paid to the hospital from the settlement that was paid to Skyler.
That's right, yeah. And then the other $250,000.
Well, okay, and then the other $250,000, two of the passengers were covered by a Medicaid HMO. As soon as the hospital found out that it was a Medicaid HMO, because health maintenance organizations, there's a statutory immunity for that type of insurance plan. The hospital released those liens. It has no lien rights with respect to the patients that were covered by Medicaid HMOs. And so my understanding is, in terms of the $250,000, the patients that would share in that, or the plaintiffs, are the plaintiffs that you see that are parties in this case that are challenging the hospital.
And so your understanding is the other three or four, and I don't know the exact number, that were injured, that the hospital has released their liens against all of them. Is that your understanding?
Well, I would say this. I mean, I'm not privy to exactly who's sharing what and how the settlement proceeds have been divided. And, in fact, I don't even think a settlement has been finalized. I mean, I doubt there is even a release at this point. Certainly it hasn't been provided to us, so I can't answer that question. I do know that of all the liens that were filed, one has been satisfied, two have been released. And I'm not sure how the settlement proceeds are being divided or are being proposed to be divided by the plaintiff.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions? Red light is on. Thank you, Mr. Healy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lanford, for your arguments today in yet another case involving different kind of insurance, but how to share proceeds for a personal injury case. That concludes our hearing on 09-AP-2795, Jamie Gister versus American Family Mutual Insurance Company. The court is in recess until 1:30. There may be students who are coming in who will meet with, I think it's Justice Gableman today.
I'm going to do it today instead.
Okay. Justice Rogensack, and everybody's invited. A discussion of procedures of the court, not a discussion of the substantive issues that we have heard in the two cases. We're in recess till 1:30.